Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
If you were with us last week, you got to know just a little bit of Hannah Overton's story. I am dying for her to write a book of the whole thing because I've heard this testimony, I've heard her speak, I've talked and had conversations with her. And even though it's a hard story to hear, it was harder to live, that God was ministering to Hannah in so many different ways and reminding her that she had a Father in heaven who loved her. Her story, if you listened last week, she was wrongly charged with the death of a little boy that she had set out to love and to raise in a godly home. And it was just a travesty and a tragedy. And when we were last talking with Hannah last week, she was talking about being transferred from jail to prison and realizing that the women in the prison, even if they were only going to be there for a year or 2 years, had no hope. And even though she had a life sentence because of Jesus and a relationship with Jesus, she still had a hope, which I just love that, Hannah, yeah, that you brought out the fact that even though you're angry, even though everything's unfair, you're not letting go of hope. You know, even though it's not even a hope right then on earth, but a hope in Jesus, right?
Yes. So as I began to really think about that and began to look at these ladies and just see the hope that they didn't have, that they needed, I started talking to them and I was like, can we do a Bible study? So at the church that I had been at previously, my pastor's wife, and this is kind of a funny story, but it's just a God story again. My pastor's wife had invited me to teach a story. I'd been doing youth ministry for years there, but then she asked me to teach a women's Bible study called Healed and Set Free right before all of this happened. And my initial response was, no, I didn't want to teach this Bible study. And she was like, come on, I really feel like God wants you to do this. And I looked at her and I said, Noreen, I don't like women. I don't want to do this. And she was like, what do you mean you don't like women? I was like, I just, I'll do it with teenagers or, you know, but I women are so catty. You know, I was like, had all these like excuses on why I didn't want to do this. And, you know, I had been abused by a woman in the past, and I had been, you know, I had just shut down to friendships with women, and I didn't want to do this. But she kept pushing because she felt like God had asked her to do this. And I know for a fact, like, this was something God had for me. And that Bible study, like, gave me tools that I needed to be able to make it through this.
Well, let's just say the title again, also Healed and Set Free.
I know. Wow.
Yeah. Healed and Set Free, right? Before I even went in. And so I asked for that study again. I had just taught through that study before I went in. And then I did the study with, you know, two ladies at first. And it was, you know, it was really life changing for those two ladies. And as people around them started seeing how they were responding, then they wanted to join. And before I knew it, there were four ladies and then six ladies. And then I got in trouble because you can't have more than four ladies doing anything together at one time without it being called inciting a riot.
Wow.
And so I was inciting a riot and I had to stop. And so, so I had to divide it up into two studies. And so then I was doing, you know, two Bible studies a week. And before I knew it, I was doing one every night.
Wow.
And then
amazing.
And then, by the time I left, there were 100 women doing Bible studies in the prison.
Wow.
And they were, you know, different people were teaching. Like I would teach Bible studies every night, and then those women would teach Bible studies, and then they would, you know, I would send notes from my studies the next day, like through the laundry, which was again against the rules, but we would, you know, it was like smuggling Bibles in China. This the way I would look at it to get these Bible studies to the other dorms, and you know, so now that I'm home, this has continued to grow, and there's on average 1,000 women doing the Bible studies. You know, it changes because people leave the prisons and then new people come in all the time, but it's staying at about an average of 1,000 women doing the Bible studies right now.
You know, what I find interesting too and hilarious, you know, ironic, is that you didn't like women because they were so catty. And so God sends you to kind of the hardest women, you know,
right.
Not like the yes. church women that, you know, at least act nice, you know, surfacey, but you got the real exposure to the roughest, toughest, meanest women. Hannah, real quick, I know that I want to talk about your release and what the Lord put on your heart to do after you were released. But I remember you sharing about one woman who was especially hard on you and what God did with her. Do you remember that story? I think she took over the Bible study when you left.
Yes. So her name is Sunny, and she's still in there. She's actually her first eligibility for parole is next year. So we're praying that she'll come join us next year. But she was the head of the Wiccan Circle when I met her. And she worked with me in the laundry. And when I met her, I was still like crying all the time because I was missing my kids. And I was, you know, that's not something you do in prison. You don't cry about things in prison. And I was, you know, I was pretty wimpy and I kept getting, you know, crying, and she was getting very upset with me because I wouldn't stop doing this. And so she got me into a back room at one point, and she's like cussing at me and telling me that I had to stop crying. And she told me, she's like, this place is your home and you need to get used to it. And I was upset. I was like, this place is not my home. And she said, is this not where you get your mail? And I said, well, yeah. She said, is it where you go to sleep at night? I said, yes. She said, if you lived in an apartment for 3 months, would you call it your home? I said, well, maybe. And she said, well, even if you win your appeal, it's not going to be more than 3 months. I mean, it's not going to be less than 3 months. So even if you win your very first appeal, you're going to be here 3 months at very least. So you need to just shut up and start and realize this is your home. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. This is not my home. This is prison. And she said, and you say you're a Christian? Don't you think that if God is in control of everything, that God may have put you here for a reason, and you should just be okay with where you're at while you're here?
Wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I left there not long after I left my work environment, went back to my dorm, and I was so upset. I was mad at God for allowing this witch to talk to me like that. I'm like, how can you do that? Why didn't you stop her? You know, she shouldn't be able to tell me this, you know. And I'm telling God how unfair it is that he let this witch talk to me like that. You know, he should have stopped this situation. Protected me from this. And I opened up my Bible to Acts 17, I believe it is. And it says that it says God chose when and where we should live.
Yes.
So that we would search him and find who he is.
Yes.
Acts 16, yeah.
Yep.
And it's where Paul, you know, Paul's like talking to them, and he's like, he's looking at, you know, all these different, he's talking about all the gods that, you know, and all this stuff anyway, but God like specifically, you know, spoke to me right then. And he's like, wait a minute, I allowed her to talk to you like that because I can use whoever I want. And what she said was true, you know, And I had to like, you know, bite my tongue. And it was then that I really began to realize like God had a purpose for me there. God had a reason you know. And that was really where, you know, it was up until that point that I like wasn't caring about the hummingbird thing, wasn't listening, wasn't, you know, I was just like making it through the day, not really listening to God, just continuing to tell him how unfair it was, not wanting to hear his side of anything, you know, just wanted to whine. And at that point, when this witch talked to me that way, she like kind of broke that at that point and told, you know, got me to listen to God and to realize like he had a purpose and he had a plan, and whatever that was, I needed to submit to that. Maybe I don't understand it right now, but whether I understand or not, I need to submit because he has a purpose. And, you know, God had a much bigger plan for her because she, over the next few years, ended up getting saved. And she is now like one of our like ambassadors in there, and she leads the Bible studies in there, and she, you know, sends people to us to go through the discipleship school when they get out. And, you know, she does a lot of artwork that, we use to help raise, help fundraise for the outreaches that we do into the prisons. You know, even the Bible studies that we send in to those 1,000 women take a lot of money to send in, and you know, with that, you know, her artwork helps pay for that. You know, different things like that. But it's only by the grace of God.
Now, I want to also talk about Hannah, like, and this is a segue to the ministry that God is using you in now. And one of the things is that, when you got out of prison, you couldn't go emotionally, physically, mentally, and even spiritually. I mean, physically you did, but you couldn't really enter into life as it was before prison. And I think that, you know, people have this expectation, well, you're out of prison. Look what God did. You should be just fine now. But it was... Tell us a little bit about that emotional adjustment and how that led to starting Syndeo Ministries.
Okay. So, yeah, everybody, you know, really wanted it to be like happily ever after. And not that it isn't, you know, we are, you know, our family is together and we love each other and we're happy, but it was not easy. You know, that first year, you know, my husband and I hardly made it through that first year. Mm-hmm. You know, we argued all the time, you know, and if we hadn't made a commitment before God that we were not going to get divorced, we probably would have, you know, you know, I really, really struggled with even suicidal thoughts, you know, because I felt like I couldn't be the mom that I wanted to be, the mom that I used to be. Even I had PTSD really bad. Before I was convicted, I had a dream that I was in, that I was in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And, in my dream, the king like changed into my judge's face. And then, so I'm telling the judge, like, even if I'm still going to praise him. Right. So when I woke up from the dream prior to prison, I had really thought that it was like almost over and God was like giving me a promise that it was almost over. And I was going to come out of this almost not smelling like smoke. And then when I was convicted, I went to God with, wait a minute, why isn't this over? And he reminded me, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went through the fire. And, you know, I had thought the fire was just having to go to trial, but there was more to it. And then he, you know, my ways are not his ways. And so as I went through the next 7 years, I really held on to the fact that I wasn't going to smell like smoke. And when I got out and I did smell like smoke, in fact, I had been pretty burnt, you know, and I had, you know, I had nightmares. I had, if somebody touched me in the middle of the night, I woke up fighting, like, and I, you know, I punched my husband in the nose one night before I woke up and realized it was him, and he had a black eye, you know, and then I felt really bad, you know. So then I couldn't let my kids sleep anywhere near me because I was scared that was going to hurt them, or, you know, things like that. And it was really hard for me. And I was really struggling with that, that fact that I smelled like smoke. And I was like, God, you know, you told me that I wasn't going to smell like smoke. And I couldn't even say the word PTSD because it felt like too broken to me, like to admit that I had PTSD. And people around me were telling me, you know, you probably need to see a counselor. I think you have some PTSD. And I didn't want to. And finally, I went to a counselor. And my counselor had actually been a lady that had been a counselor in a prison in the past.
Wow.
And she, so she knew what, you know, what happens inside prison. So that was really good for me because it helped me to feel like like she would understand me. And so I began to tell her some things, but I never told her this thing about smelling like smoke. I was just telling her, you know, kind of speaking around the subject, even though that was my big issue. I wasn't telling her my big issue. And she was a Christian. She had been fired from the prison system because she was bringing too much Jesus into the prison system. So then one day she tells me, she says, Hannah, can I step out of counselor mode and speak to you like your sister in Christ? And I said, okay. You know, and she's like, I'm going to say something and it might upset you, but I feel like God's telling me I need to tell you this. And I was like, if God's telling you, you need to tell me something and you don't tell me, I'm going to be upset. And so she said, Hannah, she said, you've been telling God that you smell like smoke. I was like, oh no. You know?
Wow.
I hadn't told anybody that.
Yeah.
Except for God.
Yep.
Yeah. And she said, you've been telling God that you smell like smoke. And she's like, does it ever say anywhere in the Bible that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego like roasting marshmallows or hung out with the guards or, you know, didn't have PTSD? And I'm like, no. And she's like, will you open up the Bible right now and see what it says after it says they didn't smell like smoke? And right after that is where the king says that everyone in the whole nation needs to worship the one true God. And she said the reason that it says they didn't smell like smoke is because they smelled like the aroma of Christ. And she said, not smelling like smoke has nothing to do with your PTSD. And if God didn't allow you to have these issues, you would not be able to do the ministry that God called you to.
So
you need to stop whining about them.
Well, and to have the Lord bring you a counselor who understands and had that insight and was listening to the Lord of what specifically to give to you, almost in code, so that you'd go, wait, I never told you that.
Yeah.
How would
yeah.
you know that? It's so precise. This is the ways of our God, that he shows his love for us in abundant ways. And our position is to seek him and look for him and listen to him. And as you've said so many times in these two interviews, to surrender, to submit, to just receive what he's trying to accomplish in us and through us, and sometimes in spite of us. And you right. have really laid out this pathway that I know I can relate to, our listeners can relate to. That's not what I thought you were going to do with my life, Lord. That's not what I had in mind. I don't like this. This is not what I want. Vindicate me. All the Psalms come back up of that David cried out, you know, make things right. And the Lord is at work, and he has done that in your life. The beauty of this storytelling is for us to see the progression and how you trusted, even when it was so painful, and what God has been able to do since then. Now you are ministering to multitudes.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Syndeo yeah. and, you know, how it started, and tell us a little bit about the needs too, so that the listeners can hear the needs. All of it.
Yes. So we have
in 5 minutes. In 5 minutes, tell us all about this.
5 minutes. Okay. So
again,
we have
show notes.
Sendeo Ministries means bound with them. Bound is in Hebrews 13:3, where it says, remember those in prison as if you were bound with them, those suffering as if you were suffering also. Bound means two things: bound, like chained, like I was, and bound, like all believers should be, like bound in heart.
Yeah.
And so that's why we call it Sendeo. But we have a transitional home with women that come out of prison that, you know, today I picked up a woman that's been in prison for many years that has no family. She has nowhere to go. She cried the whole way here because she's like, I don't even know how to live. I don't know how to do anything. Mm. I don't know if you're going to keep me here. She was just crying and crying and crying. But, you know, just so that, you know, we give them a safe place to make this transition. The transition that was so hard for me with all the support that I had, and these people have, a lot of them, most of them have no support. And so we give them a safe place to do that. Now, we don't take any government funds because that would mean that we couldn't do it we couldn't do a faith-based program. And without God, it's not possible, I don't think, you know. And so we do it all by donations. And so, you know, a lot of times the donations just are barely there. So anything for, you know, that is a lot monthly that it takes to run that home. We also have a Bible studies that go in quarterly, 1,000 Bible studies. A Calvary Chapel pastor from Plano, Texas, pastor's wife, I'm sorry, she passed away already, but she donated her Bible studies that she wrote while she was alive for us to edit, to make them available in a way that that is good, like more, that is a way that people from in prison can relate to. So sometimes we have to take out, you know, talk to your husband about this, or, you know, go in the, you know, what does it feel like when you're in the kitchen cooking, or, you know, things like that, that they won't experience, but it just helps them to be able to have one that's more relatable. And then we send in these studies and make them into book form, because she just had written them on paper. And so we make them into book form and then we send them in, and then they get certificates for that also help them to be able to make parole. And, so we send those in quarterly to 1,000 women, and that also costs money. We also do, everyone that's involved in Bible study, we send them encouraging notes monthly. We started that during COVID because so many people in the Texas prison system were trying to commit suicide.
Wow.
And it's continued that way. But we found that getting one encouraging note monthly has lowered that rate by leaps and bounds. And like, just to be able to get a note from somebody they don't even know that just tells them they haven't been forgotten and somebody's praying for them, you know, and a little scripture can change their life, you know. So we have a place on our website where people can sign up to write those notes, and then we address them and send them in. And we also, twice a year, we do these outreaches that we have churches that sign up to either do fundraising or give donations for. In the summer, we give cooling towels and water bottles. And at Christmas time, we give hygiene products. In Texas, the temperatures go up to like 120, 130 degrees in the prisons because it's metal buildings and they don't have air conditioning.
Wow.
And so people die from the prison, from the temperatures. I watched people die in there. And there are lawsuits going on about this, and it has been declared unconstitutional, but it will still probably take years for it to be changed. So in the meantime, we're doing things to try to help that. But it cost us, you know, $25,000 in the summer and at least $70,000 at Christmas to do those outreaches. And we do it all by donations. So like every $5 that is sent helps with that.
And Hannah, what is the name of the ministry? If someone wants to look this up online, where are they going to go?
It's Sendeo Ministries, S-Y-N-D-E-O. Ministries, MINSTRIES. And you can look on Facebook. We have a website, sendeoministries.com, and Instagram, all the other, you know, social media. We're on most social media. And you can just email us and ask any questions. We also have groups that come here and serve, or if you had some talent you want to help with, help show the ladies, you know, they need even basic how to live talents, you know.
So, thank you, Hannah.
They love to have special speakers.
We are so
appreciative. That's so great. Yes. We're, you know what? Ascendeo Ministries, thank you, Hannah. What a
thank
testimony.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.